This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship. For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org or call 800-698-7884.
I'm going to go ahead and get started, even though people may still be coming in. Okay. Yeah. Glad you guys could make it today. Hope you're enjoying the conference, getting a lot out of it. My name is John Cleary, and I've been in Xenos for 22 years. I was reached for Christ through this church back in 1980, and I started and got involved in a home group right away. That's when they started up home groups, essentially. The model that we know today, and I've been leading and teaching in home groups for about 20 years. There are handouts. Everybody get a handout? I've also blown up two home groups. I have failed miserably in a couple and have lost some home groups. I was also kicked out of leadership at one point. And I list that not, you know, just to be funny, but I think that is sometimes part of the credentials of being a little more effective at leading is having gone through some wars, having gone through some battles. And so I would view those years. There's a handout right outside the door if you want to grab that. I would view those. Could you make sure folks grab handouts? View that as a huge part of my growth anyway. I don't know how effective it's been in helping others, but it sure has helped me. And so I really list that out. We are always amazed, totally humbled and amazed by the response we get at the Summer Institute. And we just want you guys to know these models and these methods that we're talking about that we use, it's not because we think this is the way to do church. We're not looking at this as the expert way of setting up your church, or that you need to take this model and infuse it into your model and use it. These are just ways that we have found to be effective, and some folks over the years, by God's grace, have shown a lot of interest in it. So we're basically just presenting what has worked for us, and we hope that if you can take it and streamline it for your model, streamline it for your group, that would be great. So why don't I pray and we'll get started. Lord, this is a great privilege to stand before you and to just benefit from all the years of insight and experience that we've been able to benefit from so far through Hendrix and Getz and Leffel and Dennis. And tonight, Gary, I just really praise you, Lord, that we get this great opportunity to sit under such great teaching. We want to pray for your model of how to do church, Lord. We know that that's going to look very different depending upon our field, our culture, our city, our people. We want to figure out how you want us to operate in that setting, Father. So we pray for insights today that can benefit our home churches, that can benefit our leaders, that can benefit the people that we're trying to reach, so that we can create a form, or so that the form will actually evolve from what you lay down as true, Lord. That's what we want to focus on. So we just thank you for this chance to take some time and focus on something that I feel is really dear to your heart. Amen. Okay, coaching and overseeing home group leaders. We're going to be talking about what we might do as a coach. We tend around Xenos to call ourselves consultants, home group consultants. Now they're calling us sphere leaders. We don't really have a job title. But that's essentially what we're doing. When we're overseeing the leaders who are actually doing the work in the home groups. And so we're going to want to take a look at who are your leaders. And so if you look on your handout on that side, not the side with the boxes, the four boxes, the other side. We're going to take a look first at who are your leaders, what is their focus, and then what's your role that you're going to play in their lives. And then what our role is, what I'm talking about here, is trying to help them kind of get their focus in check so that they're not completely undone by all that lays in front of them. So your leaders, do you have an understanding of what an incredible resource your leaders are? These are folks, at least in Xenos, the home group leaders are all volunteer. Nobody's a paid home group leader. They are all essentially carrying two full-time jobs. One of them they get paid for. The other one they get a lot of grief for. And that's their ministry. And yet it sometimes can amount to 30, 40 hours a week in all that they do for their home group. And so to realize these are folks that have stepped forward and have put themselves on the front line, have taken on additional sacrifices, have taken on additional hardships, have taken on the flack from their group and from others, have taken on attack from the enemy voluntarily. We need to recognize that and understand that and be able to really value what they have done in no matter what capacity it is, no matter how lame we may think they are as a leader. They're doing a lot. They're answering the call of God in their life. So we got to somehow be able to value that. Who are they? Do you have them identified? Or are you just still trying to promote some people to step forward and take some leadership? If you've got them identified, if they're actually leading, if they've actually got a following, that's going to make your job as an overseer or a coach a lot easier. Okay? If you're still trying to figure out who it is that's going to lead, then you kind of got to go back even from here. This is going to be something that you'll put in place once you've identified who they are. What is their role? That's what we're going to talk about tonight. Very briefly, what we see is a lot of them take on a lot more than I think what God expects them to. Certainly more than what we expect them to. They come confused, worn out, weighed down. If we're not real clear about what their role is as a home group leader, then we're not going to be able to help them very much. So, should they be a mother to the people in their group? You know, Lef talked about last night about nurturing like a mother tenderly cares for a child. Is that the role that they should be playing? Should they be the counselor to all the problems of all the people in their group? You know, if we're not, should they be the answer man, the fix-it guy in their group? If we're not clear about their role, then we're going to have a hard time really giving them direction and freeing them up from a burden that, again, typically is not designed for them to carry if they're carrying on. They should do counseling. They should nurture and instruct. But what is their role? We're trying to help them understand that their role is to lead. Their role really is very simple. It is to lead the people toward an objective that Jesus Christ lays out. I like how Sanders says it in Spiritual Leadership. Leadership is often viewed as a product of natural endowments and traits of personality, intellectual capacity, force of will, enthusiasm, that such talents and scholastic attainments do greatly enhance leadership is beyond question. But those are not the factors of paramount importance in the spiritual leader. The real qualities of leadership are to be found in those who are willing to suffer for the sake of objectives great enough to demand their wholehearted obedience. Real qualities of leadership are to be found in those who are willing to suffer for the sake of objectives great enough to demand their wholehearted obedience. The main objective that we feel that the home group leader can wholeheartedly give themselves to is planting a group. We feel like This is the heart of what we're called to as leaders in the New Testament. We are called to discipleship. We are called to evangelism. We're definitely called to engineer and promote community. But the bigger focus, the focus that's out there, is we're called to duplicate. We're called to multiply. And what we would call plant the group. So that's what we're trying to promote more than anything as their focus. The goal of planning should drive our events, our discussion, our direction, our planning. It pretty much should permeate our leadership together. So my role as a coach or as an overseer is to talk to them about how is this more and more a part of their focus in their life. Planting should be something that we want to share. We want to perpetuate it with others by planning our groups. Did you have a question?
When you say planning, are you talking about them starting their initial group or their group multiplying?
Their group. So I was discipled, let's say, by you, and we grow up together in a home group, and you continue to disciple me, and eventually I start discipling myself, and eventually our home group splits or plants. So you've planted me as a group because that was your focus and that's what your objective and drive has been, okay? We should be in the business of sharing the environment that we enjoy in the home group. We love the home group. The home group is where to be in Xenos. That's what we think. It's the environment of community. It's the environment of relationships and of really understanding each other. It's where we can share one another's burdens and confess and forgive each other and all that. That's not going to happen in Sunday meeting when you just kind of skip off of each other. That's not going to happen there. It happens in on the home group level, okay? It is so vital and so life-changing that we want to share it. And so at a meeting when some of this material was presented over a year ago to all of our leadership team, there was over 400 there. Everyone was asked to raise their hand if they've been in a home group since 1980, and there was about 90% of them raised their hand. And then they were asked, who of you were in a home church before 1980? And the other 10% raised their hand. And the point was made, this 90% has benefited from the joys and from the growth and from the challenges of body life and of community because these 10% decided to take the risk of planning a group. The 10% decided to step out and make that their objective and make that their goal. We've got to be able to visualize our group 10 years from now, and some of us will feel like we'll know each other better and we'll be all warm and we'll be, you know, it'll be a much tighter community if we just stay together. You know, my wife has been gardening the last couple years with flowers. And we've noticed that with bulbs, you know, they can grow for a couple years, okay, where you've planted them. But if you don't start splitting them out, they start choking each other out. And that's what happens in the group that doesn't plant. You've got to be able to split it out so that it remains healthy and it remains vital. And so we've got to be able to do this and realize that it is a selfless move. It's a hard move. It's a healthy move, though, for us to do that. So we're constantly talking to our leaders about your plant plan. What's your plant plan? Who are you going to plant with as a co-leader, and who are you setting your disciple up to plant with as a co-leader? And what's the date of that plant plan? And a lot of folks freak out, including our leaders, but a lot of guests that hear this kind of freak out over this. You mean, what if you plant your group? Do you start with a plant plan right away? Yeah, we start talking about it right away because this is the ethos, the mentality behind the group. We're not here just to get close to each other. That's part of it. But we're here to duplicate what Jesus Christ has given us. And so we're here to plant. And so as I build a relationship with you in a one-on-one discipleship time, or as we go out together to serve your neighbors or whatever, we're doing it with the whole intent of growing Christ Church, of being used there to promote and grow Christ Church so that we can plant.
When you start a plant, do you just take a leader and a couple people, or do you split the group in half?
It depends on what the plant is, and there's all sorts of variations of how the plant can use. If we were one home group, and you and your wife were a leader, and you and your wife were a leader, and we might just split the group in half like this, because these are the folks that you guys influence, and these are the folks that you guys influence. If you two couples decided, we want to hang together because we enjoy the teamwork that we've had and experienced over the years, so we want to raise up these two couples over here so that they go off with their folks and we stay with our folks. So there's a whole bunch of different variations. Some of them get real confusing in that if you and your wife have worked with these guys and they have had, let's say, an open door to a lot of evangelism and a lot of discipleship, but you guys haven't because your primary work has been with them, you might send them off and then you guys might go up and join up with another couple from another home group. So there's all different ways to slice it up. But the goal is, can we duplicate what we've got here? Can we split it out? Three to 5 years is typical. Some take a lot longer. Ours took 7 years to initially plant. We planted a year and a half ago, and we'll probably plant in about 6 to 12 months. So the second cycle is taking a lot shorter. So it just kind of depends on what field you're reaching.
Is it like when you get to a certain number of people, it gets to be too big?
That's a good question. You guys hear that? If this is the room that we're meeting in, we're already starting to get kind of crowded in here and using each other's oxygen. And it's getting a little uncomfortable, you know. So let's plant. You know, if the room's smaller, it's going to plant out a little smaller. If we're not ready leadership-wise, then we're going to go find a bigger facility. But we insist that people do meet in homes and don't use the facilities up here because this makes it a little too institutional. Yeah, 25 to 30 is usually when they plan out. Some get up a little bigger depending on their space. Yeah. So we're going to decide, have them decide on a plant plan and set a date. And then we're asking them to constantly work that plan through prayer. We don't want to just go through the motions. We're going to take a look at different plans in all these areas of what we consider are necessary for a healthy home group. And we're going to talk about what do you do to specifically work evangelism in the home group. My job as a coach is to work with you as a leader in helping you plan for evangelism and in helping you plan for discipleship. Okay? But the plan is ridiculous unless we're prayerfully working it. So we're not just trying to go through the motions. We're not just trying to be a leader and show up at a meeting and maybe even have a great meeting and walk out of there. We're trying to take this plan to a deeper level so that we're actually impacting lives and able then to duplicate the work that God is allowing us to do. So my job in overseeing the leaders, and our job, Laura also does this as well. I don't see anybody else in here. Pam does a little bit. You work with home group leaders some. Our job then is to check and follow up and encourage and strategize with them about their plans. Okay? We're not the experts. We're not trying to jump in and fix every problem that they got. We're not even trying to give them some of the ideas. We're trying to help them get to the ideas and get before the Lord on them.
When you say you strategize or consult, you do that on a one-on-one basis, or do you have a continuing training schedule?
Yep. Both. Yeah. Our role in their lives then is to get some regular time with them. And so one of our goals is to meet with at least one leader from the team. We lead in teams. We don't lead. Even a married couple is not considered plurality of leadership in Xenos. So we lead either by three or more. If they're married, if they're single, it can be two, but if they're married, then it's three or more that are leading. And we're going to want to meet with at least one leader once a month. Okay, so we're getting regular time to build them up, to encourage them, to strategize, to follow up. We also have open access. We give them open access to us at any time. They can call up if there's an emergency, if they're feeling, you know, overwhelmed, if they're fretting about something, just give us a call. Let's try to talk it through. Yeah.
Are you a coach's staff, or are you volunteer also?
In Xenos, we're all staff that consult with these home groups. I know in other models, they're not staff. Because we are staff, we're able to handle a larger amount of home groups, and the home groups are larger than most small groups or cell groups that other churches might have under other models. So right now, I'm working with 14 home groups. Some of them are up to 30, 40 people. So we're working through discipleship relationships and plant plans and all that for that many people. Because we are staff, we're able to do that. Yeah. Right. At least once a month, we're getting with them to have a consulting session or whatever you want to call it. As well, we're trying to get to know their people, so we're periodically visiting their home groups. We try to do that at least once a year. We have annual evaluations with them where we go through a pretty extensive evaluation form on their group. Typically, though, we're slated to meet with them once a month. The typical routine is 2 to 4 times a month where you're making some contact with somebody in the home group just because they're asking for help and we're trying to make ourselves as available as possible. I think I'd consider my main role with the leaders is to facilitate their pursuit of God. Even if you have been the one to ask someone to step into a role of leadership, Hybels calls that the ask, where you want to make the ask of people, you know, and so you go and you say, look, you're having an influence over Bill's life. Why don't you consider leading? You could lead a small group. Even if he steps up and lead, he's not really answering my invitation. Hopefully he's answering God's invitation and God's call to him to lead. So my role in his life now is to help facilitate his pursuit of God in that role. And if I can do that, then he's going to be successful. My job is not to get him to tote the Xenos wagon, you know, of percentage growth and discipleship triads and a number of cell groups and all that other stuff. Some of those things can be used, as we'll see, as tools to assess how effective the work is. But my role is to help facilitate what he wants to do with God, what God is calling him to do. And so if I can connect with that, if I can, and as we're going to see, how at least how I like to do that is through a lot of questions. If I can just move closer to him and be able to somehow keep leading him back to the Lord's work. What is God calling you for in this person's life? What has God put on your heart in this area that you're struggling with? How has God challenged you in the fruit of the Spirit lately? How has God encouraged you about your leadership role here? If I can somehow connect there, then I consider that probably the main part of my job. But right along with that, because there is some real objective things that I feel we need to be responsible with, I'm trying to streamline their focus in leadership. You know, leaders are spinning a lot of plates. We've already talked about that. You guys know that as pastors and leaders and teachers in your group. You're spinning a lot of plates. If we can help streamline their focus so that they see, if I'm planning over here, and planning over here, and, you know, trying to get to a plan over here, I'm doing pretty good, you know. I'm at least being strategic in these two areas. I want to grow in my strategy over here and over here, but I'm at least being strategic and planning for success and planning for growth. So we're trying to streamline their focus on the five essentials of a healthy home group. If you flip your page, you're going to see these. right there in the middle of the page. We consider these the five essentials of a healthy home group, and so we're trying to help our leaders focus in on these. And as you'll see, the foundational element there is a faithful God. Now, first, before I go into that, I want to explain how that page works. You see those four boxes: evangelism, discipleship, community, and growing leaders. What we have the box filled in with are just sample plans. Each of these we consider necessary focuses for the leadership to take a look at for their own group. So, if I'm working with you as a leader, we might strategize and talk about, you know, what do you want to do in evangelism? What has your leadership team talked about? What have you guys tried? What do you want to try this year? And then we'll come up with a plan for how they're going to address this very necessary part of their church, evangelism. But these are just principles. These are biblical principles that once we start emphasizing in our teaching, in our relating with each other, once we start connecting to people about these principles, the form, I really liked how Getz said, the form, or was it Hendricks? One of them said the form follows the principle, right? And so, you know, a lot of us will go to these conferences and we're looking for the form and we're trying to take the form home and place it into our environment. We got to look at the principles. And if we're convinced and teaching and moving forward in the principle of it, the form is going to follow it. So the sample plan is just some of the forms that have worked for us. You're going to have to customize your own for your field and for your church and for what your people are used to and for what your people, where you want to stretch them and move them forward in their own growth. So that page is a little busy, but that's basically where we're going to go with it. Right along with that, we want to emphasize, and that's that little box there on the left in the middle of the page, that these are universals that apply to every plan. We would consider prayer a huge factor in planning out each of these. Moving forward in love, when you take a look at a plan for evangelism and you decide, you know, we're going to have three major events this year as a home group for evangelism. We're also going to do small dinner parties, and we're going to have a euchre party, and we're going to do this wine tasting, and we're going to do this movie night, and we're going to do that and that. It can almost become super functional. And it can come off to your people even like that. So we want to emphasize, let's make sure we're connecting in true relational love with our people and saying, would you like to host something? You know, I wonder if God could really work through you hosting a neighborhood party in your life. I'm not trying to pressure you for that. We want to be able to move toward these plans in a real spirit of love. Always a planting emphasis and each of the plans. We want to communicate and give vision for these plans. Have you guys ever felt frustrated because you teach and teach and teach on evangelism and nobody evangelizes? You know, nobody's discipling in my group. I just went through the master plan of evangelism and taught on discipleship for 8 weeks and nobody's getting it. You know, maybe it's not because they don't want to do it. Maybe it's because I'm not communicating directly to them. Maybe it's because I'm not giving them the vision and saying, you know, I've noticed that for 2 years you come in and out, you enjoy these meetings, you enjoy receiving, but I don't really see you giving it away to anybody. Do you feel stuck there? Do you feel like you're unable? Do you feel like you have nothing to give? You know, if I'm not directly talking, I'm talking about asking the leader this about what they're doing with their people. So if the leader is not directly talking to the members in their home group about this stuff, then they can teach about it till they're blue in the face. They're not going to be able to reproduce it unless they're effectively communicating that plan to people and effectively giving vision to it. We want to move forward in grace because there's always failure. There is constant tension. There is constant pressure. So unless we're able to communicate a lot of grace through these plans, so you made a plant plan and set the date for January of 2000. One group did this, and they still haven't planted, but they're still setting the dates on up ahead. They keep coming up against glitches in their leadership team. Some of their leaders were taken out, you know. So they're coming up against these obstacles. You know, it's not like they're failing, you know. They set the plan. They're doing a lot more than most of us are doing because they're setting the plan and they're trying to work toward it. Just because they didn't make that plan, God will extend a lot of grace. And these plans need to be grounded in truth. They need to be grounded in Scripture. Now, just to be clear, we're supposed to be out of here when? Do you guys know? 3:15. So will somebody holler at me at 5 till 3 so that we can have lots of time for questions? Yeah. I'm sorry? Oh. At 5 minutes till 3, unleash it. I'm ready for it. Now, let's take a look at these five different areas, and we'll talk about our plans. This first area, though, this foundational area to what it takes to have a healthy home group, we really don't have to have a plan for. God already has the plan. He's a faithful God. And so my role as a coach is to help you as a leader understand that every time we talk. Every time we're getting together, I want you to remember that God is a faithful God. And so, you know, we see, you guys all know these passages. 1 Corinthians 3, Paul planted, Apollos watered, God caused the growth. God's the one who makes things grow. Matthew 13, the kingdom parables. God, Jesus promises that though it started small, it's going to be huge. And then, of course, in Matthew 16, he says, I will build my church, not even hell will be able to stop it from growing. That is the picture of a faithful God. That's more general when we talk about the church. How about more specific? And the leader's saying, but, you know, I don't know that I can do this. Well, God says you can. You're His workmanship, created for these good works. If this is a call from God from you, and I don't use that term real mystically, I'm using it, I think, very objectively. I think every one of us are called to lead. In some capacity, every one of us are called. Every one of us are called to disciple. Every one of us are called to evangelize. Every one of us are called to lead in some capacity. And so this leader that has stepped into this role, to understand these are works that God has prepared, you know, that's out of your hands here. Now, involve yourself in His work in faith and under His grace. And He's going to be the one to bring that about. I love Matthew 11. 28 through 30. I should have put that up here. I did not do that. You guys all know this. That's it. I can't find it. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden. I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you shall find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my load is light. I wonder how many leaders need to be reminded of that. You know, leaders call up freaking out over the people that have, you know, attacked them in their group. What are we going to do about this? Oh, I can't take this. All the scheduling, you know, gosh, Zenos just makes us do so much, you know, and they're just loaded down. And, you know, you got to ask the question, whose yoke are you carrying at this point? Because we're told if it's a heavy yoke, then it ain't God's yoke. His yoke is light. His burden is light. And so we've got to be reminded, if I'm feeling all weighed down, it's probably my perspective. It's probably not my load. Okay? Or it's at least not God's load. So if I can help a leader get back to that, and they can understand that, sure, there is a daunting task ahead of them. All the broken people in your home group. You know, I always say that folks, and especially in my cell group, you know, if it wasn't for the Lord, I wouldn't be with any of you, you know. We would have nothing in common. I wouldn't like you. You wouldn't like me. We would not be together. You know, we're all way too broken and way too selfish and just way too sinful to come together and really care for each other on our own. But God has brought us together. What a cool thing. And now that we're all together, God can do a great thing through this community and through our work with each other. If we're understanding that we have a faithful God at the helm, we can rest. Have you ever been on a road trip with somebody that you really trusted? I love going on a road trip with someone that I feel like I could even fall asleep in the car. With some, I can't do that. My wife doesn't feel like she can do it with me. But, you know, when you feel that restful around someone, that you're willing to kind of put your life in their hands, that's what the leader needs to understand. I can step forward and deal with these people's problems and deal with all the crises that come up and deal with the headaches and deal with the pressure and the schedule and all that because I have a faithful God. Not because I'm able or capable. Not because I'm all that. Not because I've got the gifting or the training for it even. But because I have a faithful God. So that's probably one of the greatest priorities to help the leaders. The growing leaders. You're going to see this in one of your boxes. It's got all those bullets down there on the bottom right of your page. Okay? We want to first, of course, understand where our leader is at. Do they understand where they stand before the Lord? Have they presented themselves to God as a sacrifice, which Romans 12:1 calls us to? If they haven't, then we have to help them get to that point. If they have, then you know, we need to just help them understand that you're just in this growing process toward perfection. You've presented yourself as an imperfect sacrifice. That's okay. That's what God calls us to. But how then can you take steps toward growth? Because that's what's going to impact your ministry directly. We've got this great passage that somebody used. Hendricks? Was it? Last night? Oh, yeah, because he called it the ladder of growth, I think. Was it Hendricks? Yeah. So we see now for this very reason, applying all diligence, faith, moral excellence, knowledge, self-control, blah, 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 I'm not there, you know? And they're like, there's no way I can be there. And it's like, but are these qualities increasing? That's what we want to look at. As a leader, I'm interested in your life as a leader in helping you grow. I want to get up next to you and help you in your pursuit of God. So I want to help you grow because that's what's going to directly influence your church to grow. That's what's going to directly influence your discipleship. So I'm going to try to help you move toward that. I want to know how visible is your relationship with Christ. If I were to ask, and I don't ask this in a threatening way to the leaders, it could sound threatening, but if I were to ask, how visible is your relationship? If I were to ask a member in your cell group, you know, hey, is Bill growing? Do you see him growing in Christ? You know, what would they say? Are they benefiting from your growth? Do they know about the struggles that you've had? Do they know about how God has been challenging you lately? Do they see where you're failing, and are you talking about it, and how God is kind of convicting you in those areas? Where do they see you growing? Are they just one who hopes to grow, or do they have a plan for growth? You know, all of us hope to grow. All of us hope to be effective. All of us hope to be a good evangelist. All of us hope to be a loving husband. What's my plan to move toward that? That's pretty important when you're overseeing leaders. What is their plan? Because just the hope, just the desire won't get them very far. What it will lead to is a lot of frustration and a lot of grief and disappointment, because that hope always exceeds our ability. But if we're being strategic and we're being good stewards, then we're going to look at the hope and we're going to set out a plan for growth. So we've got to start talking about what's your plan, okay? Are you setting annual personal growth goals in the Word and prayer and fellowship? Are you into initiating and deeply involved with your co-leaders and with your spouse? You know, there's some leaders where I'll talk to them and I'll say, well, what does your co-leader say about this? You know, they're saying, Cleary, what do I do about this, 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 and this? What is your co-leader? Well, haven't seen him lately. Well, when's the last time you saw him? Oh, last month at our leaders meeting, except at meetings, you know. So you're not getting together with them at all? And how much modeling can go on as a team if you guys are never growing together? You know, that's going to be pretty significant. Are they honest about their character and sin issues? Do their co-leaders and their spouses and their cell group members know where the chinks in their armor are so that they can help them and pray for them? Are they growing as a spouse or a parent or a child toward their parents? You know, if they're not growing here, all of their ministry advances are going to end up kind of hollow, because this is really where the rubber meets the road in somebody's life. Don't you guys think? You know, I was convicted years ago by Oswald Sanders, same guy that I quoted from earlier. He had come to Xenos, and he had said at a meeting with all the men leaders, he said, are you somebody different in public than you are at home? And, you know, I had to weep at that point, because at that time I was out doing all of this great ministry, leading a home group and winning people to Christ and discipling and all that. And I would go home and I would literally collapse on the floor. And my wife would want to interact, and I would be, God, I'm way too busy doing God's work. Come on, you know, give me a break. You are so demanding, you know. And it was like, what, you know, he said that, Sanders said that, and I realized right there, this is a double life, you know. Are we growing with the people that are closest to us? Do we have a plan for growth? If they're not, if they say, I am so estranged from my wife, we don't even know each other. Well, praise God you're honest now about that. Let's get a plan to move toward that. How about some counseling? Maybe we could start meeting together a little more regularly, and I could feed you some books or something like that. Have you talked to your co-leaders about that? Maybe you guys can start meeting together and talking more about this, okay? Our walk with God is the legacy that we kind of leave the people in our home group. We got to realize that. The programs, the papers on discipleship that we write, the new methodologies that we come up, those are all great, and people are going to be inspired and built up. But what they're really going to be led by and impacted by is our walk with Jesus Christ. And so if the leader is not growing in their walk, then I've got to voice concern there. I've got to be able to say, you know, we've been getting together now for a year and a half, and I've yet to see a real vitality in your walk with Christ. So my role is to try to raise the tension in their lives about this area. I say that if somebody's walk is vital with Christ, I would much rather put somebody who's got a vital walk going on with God up before the church as a leader, even as a teacher, than I would somebody who has all the gifts. And so there's my co-leader gets up and teaches the word, and it is sometimes very painful to listen to him teach. He says about 300 times in the teaching. He really struggles, but you know what? I'll put him up any day of the week over some of the more gifted teachers, because he's got a vital walk going with God. He's got a vital community going with the guys that he interacts with. He shepherds the church. He lays his life down for the sheep, and the sheep know the shepherd's voice. And so they follow him, and the entire church will listen to him well over than they would the more gifted teacher sometimes. You know, so you want to, our walk is the legacy that we're leaving, folks. Let's take a look real quick at discipleship. A lot of workshops out there. This whole conference is on discipleship, so I'm just going to fly through this. You guys know these passages anyway, but just for clarity's sake, I'm describing discipleship as making time regularly to meet with younger believers and helping them grow in Christ. Okay? I think that just flipped. I think that's what that noise. We know that we're all called to it. Matthew 28, we're given a model for it in 2 Timothy. How are we going to help the leader plan for discipleship? They need to be teaching discipleship in all venues, not just in the large meetings, but one-on-one they need to talk. What do you think about discipleship? Have you ever considered discipleship in your life? They need to be interacting about discipleship on every level in their group, because that is priority in duplicating the church. You can't duplicate the church without discipleship. Okay? Are they modeling discipleship? Do we see them actually duplicating themselves? If they're not, then how are their people going to learn how to do it? They've got to be able to do it themselves. Are they praying for new disciples? Are they regularly assessing their progress or their lack of progress and using whatever tools they need to use? We use what we call a ministry chart, just a real simple thing. Here's Ron and Mike, who are leading this cell group, this men's Bible study. Ron is getting regular time with Greg, and Greg has reached out to Eric and is trying to build regular time with him. It's not really discipleship, but he's doing follow-up and shepherding with Greg. Mike is getting time with Brian and trying to get more time with Ken. Joe and John are in the cell group, but nobody's following them up. So I'm meeting with this leader. I'm meeting with Ron and talking about his group and asking about Brian and where did Eric come from, and what do you hear from Greg about Eric, and what do you hear that Greg is doing with Eric? So I'm trying to figure out what is his, when Ron says, yeah, I'm discipling Greg, what does that discipleship look like? Are you just getting together and shooting pool, you know? Or are you actually getting some wood on the ball in the Word? Are you praying about each other's marriages? Are you talking about significant issues in each other's lives? What does your discipleship look like? So this happens, let's say, in May. And I talk to Ron again in July. I pull out the ministry chart and say, so, hey, how's it going with Greg and Eric? And he's like, I haven't talked to Greg lately. And it's like, wow. That's a different brand of discipleship than what I'm used to, you know. If you're saying you're discipling him, you know, what's going on there? He's not getting led. He's not getting influenced or anything modeled in his life. So I'm able to kind of keep a more objective eye on what they are actually doing and help them kind of them be more objective about their work too. If they're calling it discipleship, I want to know what that looks like then and follow up on that. There's other tools out on the web that you can use to assess discipleship and assess the growth of the church, which would just take up way too much time. I'm going to get yelled at here in a minute, so I got to hurry. What's that? How about what?
Yeah, make a suggestion.
For
tools out there?
On our website.
On your website.
on our website. There's a lot of tools to assess home group growth and discipleship growth. Yeah. And then, you know, a lot of these workshops, Phil Frank's workshop, couple of the other workshops have a lot of tools included in those. And if you couldn't get to the workshop, you can always get the materials or the tape from them. To plan for discipleship, we want the leader to really be aware of just celebrating the movement toward it. Let's not think that any movement is just stale. You know, if Ron starts getting more regular time with Greg and it actually produces a connection with Eric, I want to show some excitement about that, because that is 2 Timothy 2 actually starting to take place. So I want to be able to verbalize some that is incredible that you got Greg to connect with Eric. Greg has been around for 10 years. He hasn't connected with anyone until recently now. How did you do that, Ron? How have you been able to do that? So I want to somehow celebrate the movement that's going on there. Whenever anyone completes a class or there's any sort of movement toward leadership or discipleship in the group, let's be excited about that. We want to have a planting emphasis. Is Ron talking to Greg about the future plant? You know, is Greg kind of nervous about that idea of sometime in the future going off from Ron? That's good. That's okay if he's nervous about it. Are they talking about it? Are they working it through? Are they seeking regular input from their leaders and coworkers? What I have found over the years is with the guys that I'm discipling, I'll go to Mark or I'll go to Pam or Laura at the office or I'll call up Gary and ask him questions. But you know who I consistently overlook for input? It's my wife. And my wife's the one that sees me interacting with these guys daily. She overhears my conversations on the phone with them. And she can easily, now I don't often want her input on it, but she can easily give me some pretty clear, constructive input. John, I think you were being too pushy with him. Or I heard you really encouraging him, but why didn't you bring up that fight that he had with his wife last night? You know, she was devastated by that. You didn't bring that up at all. You know, and I'm like, yeah, I purposefully neglected that. You know, so we should be interacting with each other about feedback on our discipleship. So I'm asking the leaders, who are you talking to? Who are you getting feedback from? Are they taking classes and reading books and getting challenged and going to conferences and so that they don't become stale in their discipleship? That's got to be part of their plan to be a better discipler. And do they have a real clear idea of what kind of topics to cover with their disciples? And we give you this link off the website, and you can take a look at that. That's just got a slew of ideas of topics. Yeah, Leo?
Here you have challenge group. Can you give a little description of
it? A challenge group. Again, this plan that you guys have is really kind of an in-house. I apologize, I didn't get rid of all the lingo and nomenclature and jargon that we use. A challenge group is just a leadership, kind of a discipleship group for leaders, though, that we've used. So I'm asking the leader, are you going to a challenge group so that they can get around other leaders and kind of iron sharpening iron?
Is that home group leaders?
Right. So here is I think you have that on your sheet, right? The link there. So that's discipleship. Now, want to read real quick 1 Peter 2. I'm going to get yelled at pretty soon here. I got to hurry. What's your name? I'm scared of you now. Okay, cool. 1 Peter 2, 4 and 5. And coming to him, coming to Christ, as to a living stone rejected by men, but choice and precious in the sight of God, you also as living stones are being built up as a spiritual house for a royal priesthood. You know, this is kind of the result of what our discipleship should end up looking like in our church. Interconnected living stones that are being built up into the house. Unfortunately, most of our churches look like this. You know, in this pile, we've got lots of great community going on. We have a whole lot of evangelism going on. You know, we have some growing leaders going on. But there's no connectedness. And this is really what discipleship provides for our church. It provides that that mutual interdependence. And so we've got to be able to move toward it and plan for it if we want to have effectiveness in our churches. Community. We see here from Ephesians 4 that every joint should be involved in producing the health of our churches. And that really kind of undergirds what community looks like. We oftentimes just refer to it as body life. Okay? So what is community? Community is kind of subjective, hard to get your hands around. The use of the body as the analogy for community and for body life is a great one because it describes vital interaction between each member in the body. It's a great description of what community should look like. How do you get it? It doesn't just happen. Look at there's the community in your neighborhood. How close and vitally interacted are you? It doesn't just happen. It has to be planned for and worked on. You've got the community of nurses, the community of professors, the community of college students. There's no interconnectedness. There's no true community being experienced. That word is often just used as having something in common with. We want to create something that's more vital and more alive and is actually the living organism that Paul describes in 1 Corinthians 12. So we got to plan for it. We got to serve each other at a pretty significant level in our evangelism, helping each other with it, with our discipleship, helping each other, serving just the needs that pop up on a regular basis with our members, whether it's a new baby or somebody moving or whatever. You know, you think about those things as a drag when you get the call that says, oh, so-and-so's car's broken down and they've got to pick up something, and you're like, ugh. This is building community. You know, when we all kind of come together and work on a common goal. I mean, it is really edifying. We now in our home group love it when somebody moves. And they typically are really glad because we all get involved in helping them move from packing and cleaning and getting the actual move down. It's great for community. We should be doing more and more of that. We should find out what it takes to have a quality meeting. We cannot build effective community with boring meetings. If the meetings are boring, then it's going to permeate the soul. We should not be boring people. So we're going to talk a little more extensively about this here in a second. Regular retreats and vacationing together. Great opportunities to build community. And it's really, I grew up in this church. I was 23 when I came around, but I basically has grown up as a Christian in this church, and I've always taken vacations, and I've always done retreats with the people in my home group. So it was really fascinating to me to hear people, when we would talk to people in other churches about this, be kind of shocked. Vacation with the people? You know, vacation's a time to get away. And it was like, that was kind of shocking to me, because I'm thinking, this is the community. This is who I want to vacation with. You know, this is who I want my kids and my wife to hang around with on the beach or up in the mountains or hiking or whatever. You know, it's not just a time to get away. It's a time to get refreshed and build up. It's a great time of building community. In all of these, we should really be practicing delegating. So we can involve other people in the church in this plan. Let's not just think this all lands on us as a leader. We've got to be able to move this along. And then we consider supporting the same central teaching, which is our large meeting, so that all the people in our home group go to the same large meeting, because again, that just adds to time together. It adds to mutual time with each other. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Is that recent?
I'm sorry?
Is that recent, how you try to go to the same central teaching, or before people just kind of went whenever they wanted to?
It's recent that we're trying to make it more intentional, yeah. Whereas before, it typically happened, but there was a lot more scatteredness. Now we're more intentional about it, yeah. But it was happening to a probably 80% extent before that, yeah. For teaching?
Free rein to teach whatever they want to teach? Or?
You mean the home group leaders have free rein, and the reason for that is because they've been well trained. They've gone through extensive coursework. They're leading.
What reporting do you get up from them?
I basically ask them what they're teaching. Because we're visiting their group, we get to hear their teaching. I'm also talking to the people around them. So, you know, if they're kind of a lame teacher, I'm hearing about that. They're usually pretty honest. Their co-leaders are there, you know, to evaluate and give them feedback. So the team, you know, it's not just one guy who's trying to head this up. And, you know, he's not going to, if he's laying eggs week after week after week, he's not going to get away with it.
And your leaders have been through a year of training before.
At least, and usually more. They've not only been through the year of coursework, the Christian Principles class, but they've been discipled by him. They've been involved in a cell group where they have probably gotten experience teaching, and then also gotten experience teaching in that home group before they're split out. So they typically have at least 2 years of coursework and at least 2 years of experience in discipleship and teaching before they're actually doing it out on their own.
Do you have any ideas for churches that are starting from the ground up? I mean, in that situation, you got a program that's ongoing.
Right.
In ours, we're trying to get it off the ground. So, you know, a year of teaching before then, that's a good idea.
This happened in 1980 with us, and they just launched out. They took the folks who were willing to take some training and to start doing some studying. They got them together, started helping them develop in their teaching ability, and they just went out and took a risk and tried it. And then, you know, that's where you find your gifted teachers. That's where you find those who are willing to put in the hard work of studying and making it work in their lives. Yeah, Mark.
There's also a whole lot of material on the Xenos website. There's a class on the website. There's a lot of good material. But I've done
good. I'm glad you reminded me. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah. Christian Principles class. Yeah. Yeah.
You have a reference to ST tape for enthusiasm.
Yeah, sorry. That's Servant Team meeting. It's a tape that you can get either over the website or at our study center. Yeah, sorry about all the jargon there.
Can you just mention what do you actually do at these home group meetings?
Sure. Great question. Home group meetings usually start with about a half hour of just hanging out. So at ours, people start showing up at 7:30, about 8 o'clock. We start the teaching. We, at our home group, we have four leaders. We've got two others that sit in on our leadership team, and then we have about three others along with them that we're raising up as teachers. So we'll rotate the teaching between all eight of us, or actually nine of us. And so we're only teaching periodically in there. There's about a half hour to 40-minute teaching, and then discussion and prayer. Meeting's over usually about 9 o'clock, and then people hang out. We have great food at it. We make sure, because that's part of, you know, what in taking a look at, let me just jump ahead here, at identifying barriers to community, part of making community is having a great meeting, and we feel like the atmosphere, we take a look at things like, you know, what kind of snacks are people just showing up with a bag of chips and a 2-liter bottle, you know, that's saying something about the group, you know. So we kind of put some effort into some of the atmospheric things in the meeting so that when somebody walks in, they see these guys care about this. I mean, they're even competing in what snack they're bringing for, you know, next week and trying to outdo each other. It's kind of cool. It's kind of fun. And so there's a great atmosphere. People hang out 2-3 hours after the teaching, just getting some good talks in, good discipleship going on and outreach.
A lot of discussion,
yeah. Lots of fun. That's something that when we visit a home group, if you don't hear a lot of laughter, there's a problem. That's one of purpose-driven guy. Warren. That's one of his things. Isn't that one of like his 8 elements that it should be fun? That a real vital Christian church should be having fun. And you know, if you don't hear that, if everybody's just real quiet and somber, that's a drag. That's going to be boring. Superficial relating, lack of truth. Materialism, all that stuff that Hendricks went over, those are all going to kill community. So we've got to identify those and kind of work through them. And guys, I am sorry. I thought I had cut 20, 30 minutes out of this teaching. Obviously, I didn't. Are there other questions that you guys have? Yeah.
And you got rid of the leaders. What happened after that?
Oh, you mean that group that set a plant plan and then they didn't make it because some of their leaders stepped out of leadership? So they had a leadership team of, I think, about 6, and 2 of the leaders had to step out. So they didn't have enough leaders then to plant. And then they went along and they were thinking that another couple was going to be able to step into leadership, but then something happened there where they weren't able to. So their plant plan has just been put on hold. They're still planning to plant. They're just not doing it in the schedule that they thought they had.
So once that leader got disbanded or whatever,
they're still in the cell group. They're still in the home church. They're still serving. But it was a moral issue. And so they were just disqualified. And so they, you know, out of integrity, they stepped out. So, yeah.
How often do the leaders in a small group get together?
I'm sorry?
How often do the leaders as a group of making these plans, how often do they get together?
So for each home group,
yes.
That's up to them. We encourage at least once a month, try to do it more often than that, but at least once a month they should be having leaders meetings. We ask them to do yearly planning and then to reassess those plans all throughout the year. So they're trying to make out this plan each year, and then they're regularly assessing it at their leaders' meetings.
Are all the leaders in the house group on the servant team?
Yes. To be a leader, you have to be on the servant. Not all servant team members are home group leaders, but all home group leaders are servant team members. Excuse me. Anybody else? Did I kick you? Sorry.
Time expectation is there for a leader? I mean, weekly or daily or monthly? How many different meetings do they have to go to? How many hours?
Do they have to go to?
Well, expectation.
Boy, it depends. I go to, and the reason I'm kind of hesitating on this is it sounds radically shocking to people. It's not like I walked in off the street and all of a sudden my entire week is now consumed with meetings. It's a gradual thing, and it's definitely a volunteer thing. I go to a Saturday night central teaching. We have Tuesday every week home church that I'm there. Every other Friday night cell group.
But that's alternated with your home group, right? The cell group's alternated with your home group?
Some alternated. We have every week home group and then every other week cell group. So on Tuesdays every night, or every week, we're doing home church. But on Fridays, 1 week the men are doing cell group, the next week the women are doing cell group. And we do that because we're reaching, our main audience are families. And we were having a babysitting issue. And so we're essentially only asking people to get babysitters once a week. Okay? And people are doing it. Even the newest person walks in and they don't see any problem with it at all. You know, they're because every other changing off on cell group, you don't need sitters when you do it that way. Did that help? And then there's leaders meetings thrown in there. There's classes thrown in there. There's discipleship thrown in there. There's there's a lot. Yeah. It's something you grow into. It's not something you put on anybody, you know. Give somebody a taste first of discipleship and let them see the impact that their life can have in somebody else's life, and they'll sell out to Jesus Christ, because that is so freaking exciting, you know, to see this person actually is changing before the Lord. I mean, that's powerful, and that's what won me into following Christ, and that's what won me into leadership, is because I saw God using very broken people to impact other people for His kingdom. And, you know, if He can use, you know, him, I wonder if He can use me. And if He can use me, He can definitely use you, you know. And it just keeps going on like that. Was there a question back there? Okay. When they're younger, singles are typically in our college ministry or in post-college home groups. But we've got a handful of singles. I think we have 8, maybe even 10 singles in our home group. Our home group has about 35 folks. And so we've got singles in our group, including in their 20s. Well, our home group is mid-20s to 70 years old, which is not typical in home group or in Xenos. Usually they're more homogenous. But we figure, especially when the singles hit like 35, 40 years old, that, you know, let's mix them up. You know, you get a whole group of 35-plus singles. That's a singles ministry, and if they want to go off and do that, that's great. But that's really not what would be considered by most a real typical community, okay? Because it is so specific. So let's mix them up and actually make a community of it.
And in leadership, or so pair them?
With we've got a single guy leading with us right now. So it's two couples and this single guy. No, you can do 3 singles. Yeah, 3 singles can lead a group. Yeah, if they're qualified to lead. Yeah.
How is a person assigned a home group?
How is a person assigned a home group? If they're brand new to Xenos, then we basically, that goes through what we call home group connection, and it would be based on their preference. If they have a certain night that they want to meet on, or they want to stay located in a certain part of the city, then we'll try to match them up with the group that they're looking to be matched up with.
John, along with that question, I think most people don't get into the small group with the person that brought them to the church in the first place.
Yeah.
It's usually they go with their friends.
It's usually a relational connection.
Along the same lines, what if within your small group you've got somebody who wants to bring a guest?
Bring them on. I hope you want to bring a guest. Yeah.
But they're not required to be a member of Xenos to be in the small
yeah.
group.
You know what? None of us are members of Xenos. We don't have any membership. Basically, being in a home group, we'd be considered a member. But there's no formal membership. Before we leave, I just want to say one thing, and then we should pray. If you have other questions, come on up. For evangelism, when you're working with leaders on setting out an evangelistic plan for their group, they have got to start with their own heart for their people. Again, people will teach and teach about evangelism and keep coming back empty because their people just aren't doing it. They're just not getting the fire in their belly for reaching the lost. Well, the leader has really got to start from just being honest in his own heart and with his own people about where he's at in evangelism. Has he developed a love for the lost? And is his heart broken about the lost? And is he honest about his failures and his attempts for evangelism? So help the leader start there and then use those other things to help them build a plan. I'm sorry we went long. Let me pray and we'll move on. Lord, I think one of the greatest privileges we have is the chance to impact someone else for you. And so I pray that as we work with the leaders who have stepped up to take on this role, that you would just give us the wisdom, you'd give us the grace and the love for them to impact them to effectively lead, Lord. We really praise you that we're that you would even choose to use us. We just really thank you for that privilege. Amen. Amen. Thank you all for coming out. Have any questions, come on up. Yeah.
Started with more traditional. Started this past year having small groups at home. We've gone over just different topics, more discussion places rather than teaching. Recommend somebody teaching?
You know what? It depends on their skill. Some of our teachers are really effective didactic teachers. You get a guy like a Jim Leffel who is out there. If I can get my guys to sit around him for a half an hour for a teaching. Sorry about this. Okay. I forgot about it. If I can get, that's going to be pretty impactful in their lives. Now, what you do want to do in the home group is make the environment different than your large meeting. So our large meeting is strictly didactic teaching. So we want to include a time of discussion. We want to make it more interactive. We want to make it less formal.
So that's what we have now, but we have maybe 10 groups. But if I go back home, all these leaders need to teach. I think they're going to freak out.
Yeah. You know what I would say is at least get them to try their hand at a 10-minute wrap on communion or, you know, who can explain discipleship in 10 minutes or less? And try to get them to do that, because what that does is it drives them deeper in the Word. You get them deeper in the Word, and you've got a better chance at effective discipleship. True. And as they try that, too, you're going to kind of see who rises up to the top in that. Now, you can't always tell by that. I'm not a gifted teacher. And, you know, I sat people through a lot of pain, you know, for the first year or two of teaching. It was very painful. But I had guys around me who kept saying, Cleary, give it a try. You know, quit being defeated about this. Dig deeper in the Word. Part of my problem was discipline. I just didn't dig deep enough in the Word. And so they kept turning me back to that. I really praise God for that, because it gave me a chance and an opportunity to find a role that I would have blown off otherwise. So
if I can get them to do 10 minutes and then have a discussion.
And even if it's not at the group, let's say that everybody else is opposed. Say, why don't you do it for me and Joe? Why don't you study John 2 and the wedding at Cana and give us a little 10-minute wrap on it? You know, that's a great way to get them deeper in the Word. It's structured. I don't know about you, but I need structure in my life. I just can't go off and spend my daily time in the Word and really soak it in. I need something structured. So if somebody says, you've got this to do and you've got this time limit, I can usually accomplish it.
I see how that's going to make the leader grow. Is everybody in the group, are they preparing for that meeting topic? Or they just don't know what's going to happen that night?
No, ours do. We announce it in our home group. You know, we're studying through the Gospel of Mark right now. So each week we're announcing what's going to be taught next week. Read ahead, you know, come with questions or whatever. So we do that kind of thing. Yeah, and we're asking people to prepare in other ways, though, for it, too, because, and I didn't get to this, but part of the making a great meeting is having everybody involved. So it's not just reliant on the teacher. So if I'm teaching, I'm calling you up and asking you, hey, the teaching's about effective evangelism, and you just won your friend to Christ. Would you share about that after the teaching? And would you mind praying to open us up? Because I know that you've been really struggling in evangelism, or something like that, where we're asking the body to really play the bigger part. And that's really, that's what's really great about the time after the teaching. That whole 2-3 hours after the teaching, you know, something that's really shocking to visitors to both our central teachings and our home churches is everybody doesn't just stand up and file out. Everybody hangs. We've got to kick people out.
Which brings up my next question. And I say this tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
Everything that you said and all the commitments and all the hours and everything.
Okay.
I know the answer.
Zenos cult.
You know, I would say if you were asking me if it's a band of committed, sold out freaks, yes. Doctrinally, we're as far from a cult as could be. But no, I think people at Zenos are freaks because.
This presentation is copyrighted, but you may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.